This is Ben Crenshaw. You're listening to Radio Golf Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Frank Forster with another episode of Radio Golf Show. Returning is multiple all-star Craig Miller, who is the owner and founder of the Craig Miller Golf School at the golf club Herzogenaurach in Germany. And he's also the coach of a young rising star, Matti Schmidt. We've done a few shows with Craig in German, and we decided this one we'll do in English because of the development of the Schmidt-Miller team, the kind of media attention they're getting in the States. So this is going to be in English for the whole world to hear. Craig, welcome. It's good to see you. Thank you for joining us today.
Good evening, Frank. Nice to be here. Nice to be here.
It's always a pleasure to see you. And there are really so many things that it's very hard to put some guardrails. But maybe we'll just start with the big open topic. Can you describe, and the last time you were here was about 14 months ago. And at that time, the train was already rolling. But can you describe this incredibly difficult journey you and Matti are on?
I think I wouldn't say it's a difficult journey. I think it's a journey that's got highs and lows, like a roller coaster. I think the journey for Matti as a player is the development, the experience for him every year, what he witnesses, how he develops as a player through his experiences on the tour. And I think for myself, the development of being probably a club pro at golf club Herzogenaurach, having a golf school, and then developing into like a coach with a player on tour, which is a complete different concept from teaching on a daily basis at a golf club. You know, when I'm with Matti coaching him on a tour, it's much more defined, you know, it's much more control, and it's a very different environment. He's obviously playing tournaments as we are on the range as well in tournament week. So that way, I think it's been a development, which has been fantastic. It's been a learning experience for me, which has been a dream come true, to see the development of a young kid coming through now into, sort of almost a top 80 player in the world and finishing 67 in America this season so far. It's been a massive part of my life, you know. Yeah.
Well, the journey for those of us who follow it fairly closely really started with the back-to-back European Championships when he was an amateur, something that not many kids have done. And then, of course, the silver medal at the Open, and then turning pro, and now his first FedEx Cup playoff. I mean, the progression is clearly there to see. And, you mentioned ups and downs. From a distance, it looks like there's a whole lot more ups and downs for sure, because it's going in the right direction. He played in the Players' Championship last year, and he was up there on the leaderboard. I think he finished top 25 or 26, tied for 26. I want to get into some of the idiosyncrasies of his game. And then this year at the Players, he missed the cut, but he birdied in the second round. He birdied 16, 17, and 18. Three of the most difficult holes, one of the most difficult finishing stretches on tour. And he birdied those three holes. Fast forward to the Wyndham, he birdies four of the last six holes, including 16, 17, and 18. to get into the FedEx Cup playoff by one. Is that just by chance because it sticks out, or would you really consider him a strong finisher of rounds or a strong finisher of events? Is that one of his strong points?
I think it's more of the routine these guys do. I think obviously they realize a little bit where they are in the position. If you're close to the cut line, or you're in contention, or FedEx trying to get into the top 70, but I think it becomes a point. It's like a routine. It's like a, so the situation is less relevant than this routine that the player does. Obviously, so the energy comes into this routine, the energy of that part when it happens is definitely there, and then you feed off this energy, I guess. But when you're playing, I think on this tour, it's very, very, these guys are very disciplined. They do the same thing over and over again. And these things happen without them even realizing, I think. You know, it kind of just happens, you know? Mm. And maybe in a situation like FedEx, there was a little bit of energy came there. You know, Matty was very tired. He was running on vapor. He'd been playing so many tournaments in a row to get there. And then this was the last push, and he just gave it all, and it just happened that he held three amazing putts in the last three holes, and Lady Luck looked at him, and it went in, you know, and he made it to the top 70. And I don't think it's so much a situation, it's more this routine these guys do.
By the way, they all went in dead center. They didn't just curl it to the side. They were right in the fucking middle.
And a good story on that, we've been really, we started working a lot with statistics, and what popped up this year was the distance between something like 15 and 30 feet was a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
So we had previously in the last sort of 6 weeks, we'd been doing these games that were developed to improve his distance control from these distances. And he tended to leave them short from this distance. We'd kind of found out through the statistics. So we've been working on that. And funny enough, we developed these games with up game, and this was the putts he held. If you looked at the putts, they were all in that zone that we've been really building up to over the previous weeks. It didn't matter where we were, in the British Open or the Scottish Open or in Munich. It was we consistently did these drills every day. When we were practicing, we would do these warm-ups and stuff like that. And then after the round or after the practice round, we would go and do these drills on the putting green that were specifically between 15, 30 feet, 40 feet, to get better distance control. And that's what kind of brought him into the FedEx playoffs. It was amazing, yeah? So the work we'd done previously through these games, nothing technically, just games, helped him get to that point. It was amazing.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, he was playing so many tournaments. He did the same thing last year on two continents. I remember when last year, when he was going back and forth to get cards on both tours. And now he did it just in the States. And I love the way, I remember when you were on with him on our show, and we asked him, what do you work on? And, you just mentioned, you know, we saw that he had a weakness on the 15 to 30 foot putts, and he phrased it, well, I work on the things where I have the most potential. And I love that. I still remember that, how he said that. It's such a positive way of looking at, it's not really a deficiency, but something that needs working on. He describes it as potential. I thought.
I mean, that's his mindset through the game. That's what the way he thinks. He thinks of, he's good, but these things can improve. You know, that's where he's got potential to improve. That's the way he got to think. You cannot think that these things are bad. You know, and we've discussed it many times. He's got to have parts of his game that's the best in the world, which he's good at. You know, he can hit it pretty far. His long irons are good. And then all the other parts of the game, we're just trying to get above maybe average or top 50 in the world. And if you can get that combination where you're very, very good at certain skills and you're, so let's say your weaker skills are like getting better and better and better, then there's nothing going to stop you then really in the end, right? And that's what we do. We monitor these good things and we try and improve the potential areas that you can get better at. And we've learned a lot about that now, yeah.
Stats monitoring, obviously Matti has matured and not necessarily changed, but he's matured as a player. From those experiences you talked about, how has the coaching changed, and how have you changed as a coach in these last, let's say, 12, 14 months?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a huge change. I mean, in the beginning, previous, before we had a small break, we did all the work away from tournaments. And Matty was very conscious when somebody was there watching him, not wanting to talk about his swing, not wanting to video his swing. And he preferred then that I would be away from the tournaments and just working between. And I think this year, because Matt is a person that's always asking people questions, he always sees what's happening, he's always talking. And I think one of the points this year, he had a had lunch with Padraig Harrington and he asked him about certain things. And one of the things was like having his coach at tournaments. And this was something that was playing in Matt's head. And Padraig said, if you can have your coach there, then he should be there at every tournament. He said, the coach can come for the week and maybe not do anything, you know, but he's there when you need him, you know. So Matty came to me and said that. I said, look, Craig, I want you to be there more. I want to try it. And I said, okay, I'm excited. He said, it's going to be tough for you because, I mean, I was a certain, when I coach, I feel like I've always got to give 100% this effort and try and make things happen. And he says, you're going to maybe have a tough time coming and not saying nothing, you know, but I want you to be there and I want us to get a routine and develop together as at the tournaments and find a way that we combine at a tournament. And we've done that. My coaching skills have changed completely when I'm at the tournament. It's much more a supporting character, my friend that looks after him. We have this routine that we do. We have these things that we're checking. We have the basics that we go through all the time, set up backswing positions that are the checklist. And then we're always slightly trying to improve the things as we're going on, but never too much at a tournament, you know? And then, so that would be a range sessions, monitoring, talking, keeping him focused on the golf course, videoing his swings, looking at what he's doing, checking his alignment up, but then using that information for after the round. Yeah. So then after the round, we would then discuss what I've seen, what he's seen, discuss the bad shots, the good shots, not actually when it's happening on the golf course, you know. So in that way, the coaching has completely changed for me there. You know, I'm doing lots of videos, but I'm keeping them to myself. So I have a backlog of videos when he plays good, a backlog of videos when he's not playing good. Matty will then ask me a question and I'll have this video evidence ready for him. So I'll say, okay, look, this is what I see. And he will say, okay, perfect, thank you. And then we go and work with it and whatever. So it's more, much more controlled environment and much more standoff. Not so much in the face, giving him information. I'm more back off. When he needs me there, I'm there. I've got the information he needs, and then it works fantastic.
So basically coaching from several thousand miles away to actually being there, but then not just being there, when you walk onto the range of these tournaments, you're there with Scottie Scheffler, you're there with McIlroy, you're there with Åberg, you were there with Butch Harmon, you're I mean, do you pinch yourself? I mean,
Crazy, yeah.
I mean,
It's unbelievable.
it's got
It's
to be
crazy.
out of this world.
We had a great story this year, Scottish Open. So, I mean, I've been to two or three events, and we're at the Scottish Open on it. I think it was Tuesday, and we walk onto the putting green next to first tee, and who's on the first tee? Scottie Scheffler with Sam Burns just about to tee off. You don't really get a tee time, and I seen this. I said, "Look, mate, go and ask them. We're going to have to play with these two guys. It's a perfect chance, you know." And then Matty's caddy, Chris, said, "Wait a minute, is it going to be productive if we go with Scottie Scheffler? Are we going to be asking them photographs and taking videos and whatever?" And then we looked at each other and said, "Matty, this is the chance. We're going to take it." So we went across to the first tee and just asked them, and we played 9 holes, and it was unbelievable. So for me, as a coach, to get that close and to see how these guys do their job, it obviously makes my ability to coach a lot better as well. You know, you don't get these experiences very often. You know, we've played British Open, practice round with John Rahm, Sergio, you know, and I mean, you don't want to interfere too much, but I can always throw in a little question and ask a little bit, that, you know. So I'm trying always to pick up all these little tips, and you can just watch how they prepare, you know. It's amazing, you know, and that way our preparation gets so much better.
And how about your relationship with some of the coaches there? Is that something that develops?
Absolutely. You start to meet these guys, you start to talk to these guys. There's lots of short game coaches out there. There's lots of guys there. So you meet them and you talk about them, and they get to know who you are. And yeah, and then you get all these Instagram comments saying, "Thaya, well done for this, well done for that." And yeah, and I like to ask the coach, I like to watch what they're doing. I'm always trying to get better myself, so I'm always looking at what these other guys are doing just out the side of my eye and asking them questions. So I mean, it's for me a dream come true, to be honest with you, Frank. You know, it's an unbelievable situation, and yeah, a great way to develop as a coach. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the amazing thing is, and obviously the Ryder Cup is down the road, and that's when we talked with you and Matti years ago, that was one of the goals he verbalized and identified. I definitely want to play on the Ryder Cup, getting into the St. Jude to the FedEx Playoff. If you can have 4 good days, you're in that team. I mean, that's really how close he is. I mean, Luke Donald, I'm sure, was at some played even in some of those tournaments in Europe that Matti played in, and he must be on some kind of watch list, along with, I guess, one guy I like a lot is this Marco Pench guy, who is a real player, and Matti, of course. Because then you look at guys like Rosie and some of the guys that are older, and soon the changing of the guard will come. It started with Hovland and Åberg and the Højgaards, and Matti is certainly in that group. You mentioned the very wise caddy who, before Matti went over there with big balls and asked to join Scheffler and Sam Burns for a practice round. How has the team Miller Schmidt grown from you two guys in Herzogenaurach to what you have now? What's your bubble like?
Matty's father's a big part.
Who was a
He's
golfer
a
himself, right? Teaching.
yeah. But I mean, Matty has a lot of respect for his father. His father is a very important character, so he's always involved. I got on great with his dad. He's a great guy. Quite a strict guy, very hard but correct person. We've got two caddies in the bag, Chris, an Irish guy, and Sponge. So, and these two guys are different in many ways. Sponge is the experienced caddy, been with Michael Campbell, won the US Open, caddied for Adam Scott, lots of guys. Coming towards the end of his career, and Chris is a younger guy from Ireland who's probably the new generation into statistics. He's a good player himself. And so it's been a mix now of that, you know. So Chris will do some stuff which is not very common, I think, on tour to have two caddies, but it worked for Matty. Obviously, I think now down the line, there's going to be a decision now. I think that one caddy is going to now be the caddy. the team developed through the carry for me. They're my guys that give me the information, right? So, like, for example, Chris would be, if I'm not there, Chris is taking video footage without Matty really knowing down the line. He would be like on course taking a video describing the wind, describing the shot, if it was good, if it was bad. And I'd get all that video footage sent to me, and then I can work on it without Matty really being too involved. And then if there was a problem, I'd speak to Matty. And also statistics, we try and keep the work of the statistics away from Matty, not having to put all the statistics in. He does it himself as well now and again and stuff. But Chris, the Irish carry, is very, very correct. He does that very, very good. He gets all the stats done, sends it to this company called Upgame, and then they develop statistics for absolutely everything. So we can find out the real positions that are weaknesses, not just guessing anymore. We're really at a point now where we know exactly what Matty needs to improve to get into the top 10 in the world. That is it. We know when he plays his best golf, when he gets his weak phases, and then you can go into the level of, okay, he has concentration losses when it's like late morning, not maybe not eating enough, and you can cover every aspect of the game now. So the team Schmidt is very good. We've got Uli Eckert from the German Golf Federation, who's still on board as well in team, and he's kind of just a guy that kind of asks around us, looks after the whole thing, asks questions if we needed anything. If I'm not there and he's there, they would give me feedback from how Matty's been doing. So again, that's another way of me knowing how he's playing, where the problems are coming from. So the team develops, and basically right now we're at a point where it's incredible. We've got a guy, Greg Attiss, who does a bit of biomechanical stuff. We had a phase where Matty wasn't very comfortable with his golf shoes. So we did a lot of testing with the golf shoes from Puma, and we found that a pair of shoes, a certain pair of shoes that they produced, gave him more vertical thrust. It's incredible. So we now use these shoes and only these shoes now, you know. So in every way, we're really covering every possible part so we can get better. Yeah.
You talk about weak phases. You mean weak phases during a round?
Yeah, weak phases through a round, concentration lapses. With Upgame, they actually tell you, he can on a they would do a 4 month spell, and they would look at the times when he was playing and times when he would tee off. They'd look at six holes, six holes, six holes, and you can see when the form is coming on. Could it be because he's not eating properly, or he's not hydrating properly? You can go into every aspect, you know. We even found out that he plays good at a certain time, and he plays weak when he has a certain tee time. It's incredible. It's
So,
incredible.
but I mean, having this information is one thing. How do you, as a coach, use that information?
Yeah, you got to decipher it. So we're basically then, I mean, obviously, the technical stuff for the would be then. We'd set up different drills. We would understand, for example, driver. If the driver, the miss is too much to the left, we're working on the technique to find out why it's going left. And then we're working on different various games on the driving range, various sort of performance drills on the driving range to try and get him focused so he's like on the range, like on the golf course, you know. And it's a lot more performance orientated as well, you know.
Is there a mental coach, a physio involved also in the team?
Yes. He was very, not too much mental coach orientated. Now he's got a guy in America, one of the best. And he talks to him on a, I would say, a weekly basis, sometimes more. So he's working with a lot of guys, this coach. I mean, so that's helped a lot. And I think Matty's started understanding he needs all this stuff. It's not like before you say, oh, I don't need that, I don't need that, you know. Now he understands he's got to cover every aspect. Otherwise, he's not going to get to the top. And he's accepted that now. He's accepted that, and he's learning every year or every month. He's learning. Yeah, to become
Well,
better.
he has that awesome and rare combination of pure talent combined with hard work. I mean, that was always the kind of image I got from him after I got to meet him with you on the show here, that he's not just a kid who has talent, goes out and does it, but he really works hard at it.
He loves it.
And
He
Sal,
loves it.
now if you put that on top, and it sounds to me, I mean, I've never heard of this statistic program that you talk about. Is that common on tour? Does everybody
Yeah,
use that, or is that?
pretty much.
I mean, I've heard stories of how coaches time the pre-shot routine, and the best players in the world, their pre-shot routine is every time within like 2/10 of a second. I mean, this is how programmed they
I
are.
mean, absolutely. But I mean, with this company, I think there's more companies, but we use a company called UpGame. And also the players have got through the PGA Tour pretty much all the stats, you know. So when we're playing, basically when we've got a tournament, the Chris has got the information where the pin positions have been for the last 4 years. So from this company, from PGA Tour. So we know exactly kind of where the pins are going to be. So we're on the golf course. You can then obviously develop that into your preparation. So these guys are knowing exactly where the pins are going to be. They've got every information where the most birdies would be made from, where the most bogeys would be made for to a certain pin position. If you're going to miss it, not just to the green, if you're going to hit to this pin on a certain position on a green, it's sometimes better to hit it in the rough on the left side than hit the fairway. So they've got every statistic that shows you on the green to that certain position how many three putts were made. So basically, you know on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday what you've got to practice in the tournament conditions. It's incredible.
And then the caddy has to know once they're out there, and then that means Matty doesn't really know unless somebody tells him it's important. Is
Yeah,
that
I mean, Matty goes through the pins himself. He has his own birdie book, and the caddy's got his birdie book, and so Matty's still in control of his own game. So that's very important. I think Matty's a person that's got to make the decisions. He doesn't like getting told how to play something or how to do something in a tournament. It's got to come from him. And I think that's what the caddy has learned also, that not to give him too much information and override what Matty thinks. Yeah. We tried with some caddies in the beginning, it didn't work. Great caddies, but just too much information, too much overload, and then Matty couldn't play his own game. So that's also a very important thing in his development. You know, he's the boss. The shot that is played is because he's deciding that shot and nobody else, you know. I think that's a very important part of his development.
Speaking of pin positions, I found this little nugget. And it's I don't remember, I think it might have been from Golf Digest or one of the internet the portals. PGA Tour, this is Memphis, TPC Southwind, the FedEx St. Jude playoff. PGA Tour officials had to move the hole location slightly on the third hole at the TPC after Germany's Matti Schmidt apparently damaged the cup with his approach shot on the 559-yard par 5. Schmidt
Landed in the hole, yeah.
the green in two and hit his second shot 207 yards to within 5.5 feet of the hole. He made the putt for eagle, but after he finished, the grounds crew had to come out and recut the hole. In the process, they moved the cup about 1 foot to the right to avoid the repaired area. There doesn't appear to be any video of Schmidt's shot, so we may have to wait until his round is over to find out exactly what happened. What happened?
I think it went straight in the hole.
It went
I
straight
think
in the hole.
that it went flew straight in the hole, I think, and destroyed the hole.
It
That's
came
what
out.
happened. And it bounced out though, yeah. I think it went straight in and it bounced out. And that's they destroyed the hole.
And do you talk with him about this? Does he come to you and say that thing was it? I mean, like a more.
Actually, I got that information from Spongy's caddy, actually. He told me about that, you know, because I talked to the caddies to him and I'm not there much more, and that was obviously a talking point, you know. And then Spongy had the That was, I think, the first round, correct? Or second round?
Yeah, that was the first round. Yeah.
And he was hitting it all over the place. You know, he had either a horrendous shot or a great shot, you know, and it was like either good or it was not like anything normal. It was either 50 meters offline or he would be hitting his second shot in the hole at a par five. And I mean, he's scoring in the first 6 holes. We talked about it. It was like crazy, you know, it was like every number from two to seven, I think he could possibly make on those first holes, you know, so.
This was at this where was this? This was at the St. Jude, where
Yeah, correct.
he was three over par after 6 holes, which is and this is what the American media and how great they are, what they love about Matti. The first 6 holes, three over par. But it's not about being three over par, it's about how he made the three over par.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Eagle, birdie,
he opened up,
bar,
yeah,
bogey,
he
double
opened
bogey,
up with a
triple bogey.
bogey par, eagle, birdie, double, triple. So you made five, four, three, two, six, seven. That first,
Incredible.
the only thing
Unbelievable,
missing
yeah.
was a hole in one on number seven. That's an interesting question, because people always strive for being consistent and all that bullshit, and some guy shoots 62, the next round he shoots 78. But what struck me really well, what struck me was at the Wyndham, where we got into the FedEx playoffs on the with the last putt, and he said in an interview that he didn't really play well in round four, but he kept it going, and then things went his way the last 3 holes when he made three birdies. This not playing well and knowing you're not playing well, and then following that up with scoring that still saves not only the day but the tournament. Is that something he's learned recently?
I think so. I think through his experience now, the last sort of years, and like I said before, these guys do so much routine, you know. And I think we all know golf can change in a second. Something that you could do and get a spark of energy from one shot can change it. And I mean, even in that round we just talked about where he was three over, after that point of that crazy beginning, he played like all pars and three birdies, you know. So I think it's what he does, and what I see is everything is exactly the same. Every shot he hits is routine. If it's good, if it's bad, he just takes it on the chin and then goes to the next shot, and never stops believing it can turn round, you know, and never stops believing that you can hit a shot from 210 meters that can go in the hole. And if you believe that way, then it makes it easy to keep on trying, you know, and he never stops trying, you know, and he knows when he's near the cut mark, or he knows when he's obviously in contention, and you've got different feelings, but he never ever changes the routine and just keeps on trying on every shot.
And obviously, now the talk starts again. When is he going to win? When is he going to win? And you and I communicate relatively frequently about him knocking on the door when you're sitting on your couch and I'm sitting on mine. He had a real chance to win the Colonial, where was tied for the lead or leading tied for the lead, I think, after 54, with I don't remember who he was playing with. This
Ben Griffin.
exactly, the guy that's on the US
Ben
Ryder
Griffin.
team. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And he was right in it, I think, until 15 or 16, where there was a two shot swing where he made bogey and the other guy made a birdie. How do you process a situation like that where he must be, and I mean, for God's sake, look at Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, the poor guy, and then they come on the TV on in the interview, and they say, well, we're just we didn't have it today, and the other guy played better, blah blah blah. How tough or how do you work through those situations, the specific
I mean,
situations, being in
I think
position
that
to.
tournament, you know, I think that tournament was a massive learning process for Matty. But I think that when I spoke to him after he'd finished, because the ending of that tournament was so positive with the chip in, he kind of turned it round, the feeling of that day, I think, you know. So he went away with an amazing feeling. And then after looking back, he knew he never had his A game. I mean, we looked where it went wrong. Again, maybe one or two short game shots. A lot was talked about putting from off the green. Why they not chip it and stuff like that? And his answer was, well, my worst putt would be better than my worst chip, just like a normal golfer would think in that situation. And he tried to get around that golf course as good as he could, with not an A game. And he did goddamn well, I think. I mean, the guy hung in and then towards the end hit some great shots, got back in contention. And in the end, it was a very positive experience for him. You know, Ben Griffin just hold the putts at the right time. He hold a couple of great putts going down the stretch. And then even in the last hole, he made a decent putt from about 3, 4 feet to win the tournament. So I think Matty, in the end, didn't lose it. Ben Griffin won it in the end, right? So we took the positives. I mean, he played three amazing rounds. He putted fantastic, which is always a big thing for us. That's a massive development process. And yeah, sure, you look at the odd bad shot in situations, but it was a very positive situation, you know. And he's done that two or three times now. You know, he's finished, I think, third behind Camila Vegas. He finished second behind Adrian Mayrhonk in Spain. So he's very close, and the big W is not far away, I don't think. It could happen any week. If Matty can put a tournament where one or two bad shots less, you know, just the odd bad shot, if it's not so destructive, or he hits a bad shot and he gets a lucky break, where he doesn't make a double bogey out of this bad shot, then he could win. It's that close. It's that close.
Well, I mean, and Colonial is obviously a big tournament.
Massive, massive event, yeah, massive event.
It's a massive event, exactly. Would you, with all the stats you have, are there, and maybe this is taking it a little bit too far, are there certain types of courses that suit him better? And taking it one step further, when you look at new goals now, and we'll talk about goal setting a little bit, I hope. Which is obviously winning, and then the Ryder Cup is there already, and of course a major or contending in a major must be on the list of goals. Is there a certain type of golf course that suits him better than others?
Well, that's a hard question. I mean, he's now starting to get to know the golf courses, obviously,
Yeah,
because you play the same courses and stuff each
exactly.
year. Just because he's third now. Again, I think because Matty's developing his game, that's not quite happened yet. Because every year he's improving in certain areas. So I think every week Matty could play well, you know. And there's not a certain course I think that would suit him. I mean, obviously his strengths are hitting these long irons into greens and attacking par fives or whatever you want to say. And but his irons have really become very strong this year. His approach shots to the green have been a huge improvement. We're really on the upward trend, where the driver has become a little bit inconsistent. So it's changing still at the moment. You know, he's not quite that consistent player in his development, so everything is developing, but sometimes slightly down before it goes up, and sometimes things are going up and others are going down. So I think that way the courses, sure he likes courses and stuff like that, but there's not a course I would say that suits him more. If he goes back to a tournament where he's finished second, it can change, or if he can miss the cut and the next year he can finish second. I think it depends on the way he's playing at that time. Yeah.
I'm not going to let you off the hook here. What is the first major he's going to win? The Open, the Masters, the PGA, or the US Open?
The Masters.
The Masters. That'll tell us what course, right? A difficult
Masters.
course where you need control, distance. I mean,
Par five, where he can
Yeah,
go for it, where he
exactly.
uses length,
I mean,
uses, yeah.
he is, I think, 11th on the PGA Tour in driving distance.
Yeah, that's a crazy amount.
11th. On the holes, I don't know what the distance is that puts him in that position, but on the holes that they measure, I don't think they measure like two or three or four holes, right, during the round. when he hits driver on the, when he hits driver in a tournament, how many tee shots does he hit the driver 100%? I would guess never.
Not really.
What
Not really.
what's he
I mean,
hitting?
the courses
80,
are,
85%? Something like that.
probably around about 90%, 87% shots there, because I mean the courses are so narrow, they're so penalising the rough. A lot of courses they go around corners, which makes it difficult for Matthew's length, because then he's got to cut corners and stuff, and that makes it, because the ball's landing at a different angle and it's harder to keep it on the fairway, so you can't really hit these full out drives, you know. But I mean, when he hits it, it's pretty impressive. He gets it up to, I mean, some of the distance he measures, like 340 yards, 350 yards and stuff. So he's right up there, like 185, kind of consistently 190 when he's pumping it out there.
Is he more of a left to right or right to left player with
Left to right,
left to
dominant left
right?
to right,
Okay.
dominant left to right,
Left to right, dominant left to right.
dominant.
Yeah, I remember all these guys trying to change their game in order to win certain tournaments. I believe Martin Kaymer would be a good example, who tried to change his swing to move the ball the other way to win the Masters. So just be careful of that.
No, we don't.
Amazing.
And
You've heard it.
we've got a way of doing it, and we're developing that way. He can hit it the other way if he needs to hit it the other way as well. So, we're definitely not going to be going down that route.
You heard it here first. He's going to win the Masters one day.
That'd be
How
good.
about his bag setup for these different tournaments? Does he mess around, baby driver, three wedges, four wedges, two iron out, three iron out, one iron in? I don't know. I mean,
In
does
America, I would say pretty much a standard bag. One driver, 3 wood, 5 wood, 4 iron to wedge, and then his wedges. In Ireland, in Scotland, we tried a few things, maybe drive an iron, a little bit of the mini driver. But Matt is kind of very, I wouldn't say stubborn, but when the club doesn't feel right after one or two shots, it's straight back into the locker.
He looks like he's really making friends with that broomstick, though.
Yeah, he likes it.
How
He
long
likes
has he
it
had that?
for a 2 year anniversary, I think, now. Just passed this year, I think, 2 year anniversary. So yeah, it's certainly good. It's certainly good. We work a lot on his setup with the broom. Really trying to get him in a good position. Obviously, his left arm position is very important. And we really work a lot of that into his setup, his balance positions on his feet, and we do a lot of work with the par. Yeah, so
Is he a tinkerer with the equipment? I mean, is that
no,
something? Does he go in the truck and talk to the guys and say, I need a little shaved off here or something? No, not at all.
absolutely not. I mean, these guys would try and tinker with him, but he's like, definitely not.
Yeah,
That.
I
I mean,
bet you
obviously,
were.
drive it.
I bet you were when you were a player, putting a little lead tape on
I
there.
love to try it. Yeah, of
There
course
you
you do.
go.
Back in the day, I haven't been trying anything to find a little bit better stuff. But now, Matty's good. I mean, we felt at the British Open that the, I think it was his 46th or 52 wedge wasn't spinning properly. So we changed it. So just small things, you know,
I mean,
but nothing like dramatically. You know,
how do you know that his 52 is not spinning properly?
yeah,
How do you know that?
I've got no idea, but he felt it.
What does that
He
mean?
felt it because obviously, if the spin is slightly different, if it's underspinning or overspinning, the distance control is then not so good, and that's what these guys are going like. We set up a game. It was a great thing. We set up a game from Up Game in Scotland, and it was 18 shots from 110 to 200, right? Random. And we were measuring with quad, we were measuring the distances, and Matty had to get within, I think it was 10%, maybe even less, 7%, I can't imagine exactly. But he hit 15 of 18 with the first ball, and then the other three missed, he hit with the second ball. So that's ex how exact these are, these guys. I mean, and if the wedge is not spinning properly and it goes 5 meters further, then it's a problem, right? So
Yeah.
he'd been noticing it in the, I think, one or two tours before. And then he just said, okay, look, can you check it? And the guys then, obviously, on the tour, you get whatever you need quickly. These guys come on the range, ask you, and the new club's there within 5 minutes.
Yeah. Is he getting mobbed on these ranges by the equipment guys and by
No.
agents? And no, not at all.
I mean, I certainly don't notice that. He's a very friendly guy, so people talk to him. He signed loads of autographs. He's very good with the crowds, Matty. But no, the people know what he needs now. Obviously, the various companies that he uses, they're always coming up to him and asking if everything's okay. Do you need anything? Every tournament, you know. And if you need something, then it's there within a second. The service these guys have got is unbelievable, you know. I mean, we obviously work very closely with Cobra. I've got to know these guys on Cobra in Europe and in America, and it's phenomenal.
For you, it must be like you're like a kid in a toy shop with all these
Crazy,
toys.
yeah, it's unbelievable. So I mean, and these guys are just looking after the players phenomenally. Yeah, they can change things. They can grind, like you say, they can kind of grind this down and whatever you want, you know, they can change ball flights. It's amazing. It's amazing.
When was the last time you guys played around together? You and
Me
Mati.
and Matty.
Yeah.
Oh, probably this year at some point, yeah, I think we played. So me and the boy Martin Hasty that works for me, he had two Scottish guys and we played Matty and the other guy, you know, and I managed to birdie the first extra hole we played to win the game against them. So
There you go. How about you and Matty head to head? How many shots do you need?
I'd put him off the back and I'd play off the yellows as a senior.
That's
I don't
no,
know if
I
I'd
know
ever.
you would never. You have too much pride to play from the yellows. I know that for
I'll
a fact.
tell you a funny story. We were in Myrtle Beach when he played quite well. I think he finished seventh. So the three of us, Chrissy's caddy, Matty, and me. And Matty likes to get away from the tournament. So we had like a Airbnb. And in Myrtle Beach, there's so many these mini golfs. So we had this every night. We were playing like mini golf competitions, the three of us, you know. So you've got this PGA Tour player turning up to these mini golf in Myrtle Beach, and we played this every night. It was so funny. It was really funny. That was a kind of escape from the tournament, you know.
Well,
It
there
was
you
fantastic. Yeah, so
go.
we do anything to get away.
Before we get and at the end, I want to talk a little about goal setting. Before we get there, a couple of questions. Your favorite golf book?
Recently, Golf Beneath the Surface, Raymond Pryor.
Golf Beneath the Surface.
Yeah.
So I have a bookshelf full of golf books. I do not have that one. I want to write that down. Golf Beneath the Surface. Wow. And your favorite golf course in Scotland?
Loch Lomond.
Loch Lomond. Wow.
Amazing. Amazing.
But you grew up in Edinburgh, right? Or
Yeah, close by,
close
yeah,
by?
nearby. It's a small town from about 20 minutes from Edinburgh.
Or East
So I grew up
Lothian? Is East Lothian that
towards
whole?
St Andrews. Towards St Andrews. I was not far from St Andrews,
Oh, okay.
on the east coast. So yeah, I grew up playing links golf.
But East Lothian, that whole area there, Gillon and
That's more towards Edinburgh. That was
yeah.
further from me. So I mean, that was more. But I mean, obviously, there's a lot of amazing courses and. I've seen some amazing courses now being with Matty as well, you know. But yeah, Loch Lomond is one of the best I've seen, one of the best I've played, I would say.
And then I got to
Thunbury. Thunbury is amazing.
what's your favorite golf course outside of Scotland? After Herzogenaurach.
No idea.
No idea.
Well, I
No
need to think
idea.
about that. I've got no idea.
Yeah, no
I
idea.
tell you what, I was very impressed with was Portrush. I thought that was a
Yeah,
pretty
yeah,
impressive, yeah.
yeah.
I thought I've seen many links courses, but I thought Portrush was one of the first links golf courses that you could see what you were doing. It was an amazing course. The bunkers were great, and everything was right in front of you. You could plan it properly. There was no really too much luck involved, you know. It was one of the best I've seen links golf courses. There was only one hole, I think 17, where you had to hit a blind shot. But the rest was, it It was a great course, I thought. Amazing course.
Right. Maybe let's talk a little bit about goal setting.
Sure.
Every player, no matter what level, should have long-term, intermediate, and short-term goals. I'm sure you have that too. But to take it a step further, every player should have some outcome, some performance, and some process goals. Can you verbalize some of the goals that you and Matti, do you sit down, you make your goals, and then you evaluate them? I mean, how does that process work in Team Schmidt?
I mean, for sure, we look at previous years and we try and obviously we're trying to improve on every year realistically, not making crazy goals. And this year was definitely, we were in South Africa. Matty played Leopard Creek last year and then we did a little training camp down there. And then we discussed just before we went back to America and we said top 70 would be a progression to get into the FedEx. Was the next one. We've done 2 years. He'd made his card, had to fight for his card both years. And we both said, look, yeah, top 70 is definitely the target short term. Obviously, the win or getting close to the win in America would be then obviously the next one, you know. And we managed to do that, really. So we've just now started to discuss. He's having some time off right now. And we've just started to discuss where we want to go now for the rest of the season because it's weird in America, the season sort of has not stopped yet. You know, you feel like it's all over after this weekend, but it still carries on, the fall series. You're still trying to get world ranking points, you're still trying to get as high as possible. So Matty's going to play a couple of events in Europe, Irish Open, probably Wentworth, I'm not sure yet, and then play the fall series. And see how far we can get up at that world ranking before the end of the season. Obviously, the more up we get and close to 50 as possible. I think he just told me we could still break into top 50 with a win and stuff like that. So the pressure's off. Now it's all bonus time, right? So we're going to now go for it and see how far we get now before the end of the season, obviously. And that makes next year a lot better. Because you actually mentioned before, you know, obviously the last years he's been playing all over the place trying to save his keep his job going, right? So you and now he's got the security with the top 70s, like can pick and choose now. So this is obviously the next level then for next year. You now can plan better, the whole thing changes, you know. So
And
that's the next goal.
so this top 70 has guaranteed him his tour card on the PGA Tour for next year.
Absolutely. It's guaranteed him he can play every event. Obviously, the signature events have got to be top 50, but he's high enough up now. He'll get every tournament. No worries. He can pick and choose whatever he wants, and he can plan better. So which is fantastic, you know. And then we play the rest of the season. I think we'll be playing Japan, which is also a bonus event. That's like a top 70 event. That he's not played in previously, so he gets into that, and then he's got like probably four events to play before the end of the season, and we just try and get as high as possible. You know, we try and get up the world ranking, try and become the best German in the world would be a nice little goal. We set that as well, you know, try and be the best German in the world ranking, and he's pretty close. I think he's sixth places behind Stefan Jäger right now, so that's a nice little goal.
I love stats as well. I checked he's number 21 in Europe right now, 81 in the world. And when you think about it, and obviously it's amazing for all these kids. And I remember when he was on, and this was 2 or 3 years ago, and how passionately he spoke about the Ryder Cup, and then the Europeans still don't pay their players, and that's cool. And he's really knocking on that door. I mean, when you think about how many Europeans played the St. Jude at TPC Southwind, I think there were less than 10 Europeans that played that tournament. I mean, Rory could have been there, but he wasn't. But it was 8 or 7 or 8 or 9 or something like that, and he was there.
Amazing, Frank.
Yeah,
It's
it's
amazing.
amazing.
You underestimate how good he's actually doing. Now
Yeah, 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 yeah.
you tend to forget that, he's in America, and you tend to forget how well, he's gone there now in America, and people said it was too early or whatever, and he's now made a career in America. It's just
Yeah.
incredible.
Well, I mean, it's just
And
beginning. It's just really the beginning.
when he finished second in Colonial, I think he moved up somewhere like the 23rd in the Ryder Cup. It was like crazy,
Right.
And of course. I mean, I think
He's definitely on Luke Donald's radar for I'm
I
sure.
think there's like the main players, obviously the squad players, and then there's other players that are like now for the potential of the next one and that are getting looked at. So there's probably about 30 players. It can change, obviously, but it's probably 30 players that are getting looked at all the time. I mean, I don't know enough about the Ryder Cup behind the scenes, but I think it's unbelievable the detail they go into
Yeah.
to pick these teams and have this team prepared. So they're going way beyond these guys, like the top 15. They're going way beyond these guys and looking and who would be the right player for that course. Obviously, Bethpage Park is a mega long golf course, and you need some guys that are going to hit it out there,
Yeah.
and obviously Matty can do that. So I guess that would have been one of the reasons, and he played, started to perform well.
You don't have to answer this question. Do you think Luke Donald is going to pick Matt Fitzpatrick after the way he treated Billy Foster?
It's a hard one. I don't know. I think you got to pick the best players. Oh, that's a tough question.
Well, Rahm is certainly a pick. He's got to be a pick. I mean, you got the 10 guys, and then you got Rahm, and then you got Matt Wallace and Fitzpatrick, and I don't know who else is down there.
I
But
would definitely pick Fitzpatrick if it were me.
yeah, I mean, the story was that when he fired Billy Foster, the caddy, the only words to him were, "Billy, we're done." Three words, and that was apparently not taken so well by the many friends of Billy Foster. But that's a whole different story. I didn't want to put you in that position,
Yeah,
but
no, it's fine. I mean, I didn't really know enough about that story
yeah,
as well. You
yeah,
never know what's happened behind the scenes on these things. You
But
never
he's
know.
got to be on the radar, definitely. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, he's
I think
20.
there's many players on the radar. There's loads of really great players that are close by, right? And
But Craig, I mean, when you look at a bunch of 16, 17-year-olds, a dozen of them, you can tell pretty quickly which ones are the ones that have it
I think so.
and don't. Yes,
Certainly.
exactly. And I'm
Yeah,
sure
I
that's
think
how they
and
work, and we talked about it before. I like this Marco Pengs guy, the guys that are real players. But then again, there might be guys like the Americans with Harmon and that you would never really expect to be there, but it's going to be one awesome thing. How are you going to watch the Ryder Cup? Is that a tradition in
well, yeah,
the
inher
Casa
yeah,
Miller?
not Yeah, we always go to my best buddy. He's an English guy, golf fanatic. So we usually have a 3 days barbecue, beers.
So the Miller Golf School is closed on those 3 days.
Certainly, I'm not there for sure.
Definitely.
I'm certainly not
That's
there.
great. That's
I'm certainly not there. So yeah, it's an amazing event. So I mean, yeah, again, for me, looking forward to the future. Obviously, these would be amazing things to be part of, right? So I'm excited. I mean, this is just the beginning for Matty, and he's going to keep on progressing, and you never know what's coming around the corner, so it's
And it's a
exciting
beginning.
times ahead.
It's a beginning for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Absolutely.
yeah, it's just a dream come true. I've told Matty so many times, I'm obviously developing as a coach, but the chance that he's given me as a coach and to do all these amazing things, travel the world with them and get to meet all these amazing people. It's a fantastic bonus on top of what I do for a job,
I think that's why this relationship is so special and why the teamwork works. Just for, I mean, we talked about how big Matti has gotten quickly with some of these quirky things, but knocking out the cup and shooting two, three, four, five, six on the first six holes. Also, in the German press, there was an article in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, one of our most, it's like our New York Times, by the great Wolfgang Schaeffler, who wrote an article about Matti's tournament in the Saint Jude, playing alone, and then it's a wonderful article. So he's certainly finally getting some of good media press here in Germany. Thank you for that article, Mr. Scheffler. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. And you mentioned, you know, how he was, how his reception was, and how he handled it in Munich at the only European Tour tournament in Germany.
Unbelievable.
And he certainly got his head in the right place.
Yeah, I mean, down there he was giving autographs. He was like, after he's finished his round, he would probably stand in there for 1 hour giving autographs.
Yeah.
He would bring every day with him T-shirts with him that he'd, and he was handing them out. On the last day, he actually gave his shoes away, signed his shoes. And
but wait a minute, those shoes, not the shoes he played in, I hope. Didn't you just say you need those shoes because of the work or whatever?
But he's got enough, don't worry. But no, he actually gave his shoes away and everything. It's incredible.
Adi Olafsson told a story. Adi Olafsson told a story where Matti was having problems. And I think he was sitting with you, maybe. And you were trying to figure out what's wrong with the game. And he was sitting at the table. And he looked down. He goes, maybe it's the shoes. Is that a true story?
There you go. I don't know. Yeah, but there you go. I mean, it's like,
and there was like a quarter of an inch. The sole was higher, or something like that. And
it's incredible. And that's what these guys are doing. I mean, yes, they really are. It's behind the scenes. It's unbelievable what's actually happening.
What's next for you? This is.
Well, I'm at the moment. In Herzl right now. Matty's coming. He's on having a little break this week. A break. It's like Matty plays probably more rounds of golf than anybody else tournament-wise. And when he has a break, he's still playing in his break as well. He just loves it, you know. So yeah. I've got to try and tell him not to play. So he's having a little holiday with his girlfriend. And then he'll come down. He's coming down next week to Herzl. We'll do 2 days good training. And then his next event will be the Irish Open. I might be going to that one, and then we'll start replanning then for the end of the season. I'll probably go to two or three events again in America then for the end of the season for the final push. And then after that, when the season finishes, then we have a nice sort of downtime. We go down to South Africa. We've played the Leopard Creek tournament the previous years. We might not play this year. We might just go down and do a week's training camp and then have a little holiday and just have some good times together and recharge the batteries and then get ready for Hawaii, I guess, next year.
There you go. Well, we're going to be there watching. Craig, it's always a pleasure to have you, and you know how much I appreciate you coming on. You come on to our RotoFest, you're there, you share your wisdom, you're open, you're honest, you're authentic. I was going to ask you how at the end, how has Craig Miller changed as a person? But I think that question has already been answered.
Thank you.
You've arrived at the top floor, and you and Matti, and you're going to hang out there for a while, and you're going to stir it up a bit. And I can't wait for next year and to see what the future brings.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Frank.
Thank you, Craig.
Take care, man.
Gentlemen.
All the best.
To the link.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.